Welcome back to the Tribal Theocrat Live Show. I'm your host, Christian Gray. Today is November 17th, 2012. Really exciting show tonight as we interview a bright and articulate young lady about Marxism and homeschooling, and that's in a few minutes. First, I want to make you aware that we have decided to go to two shows per month. Initially, we were doing the first Saturday of each month. Now we'll do the first and third Saturdays of each month. And for updates and details about future shows, you guys can follow me on Twitter and Facebook, and those links are on tribaltheocrat.com. If you're in the chat room, you can ask questions for our guest, and we'll try to get those at the end of the hour, hopefully. And lastly, I need to give a shout-out to our 50th Facebook like, as I promised. That goes to Chad Von Lind. Thanks, Chad. Hope you're enjoying your Seabreeze cocktail tonight, you lightweight. Just kidding. Well, without further ado, our guest tonight is Bobby Lee Swagger. Thanks for coming on the show, Bobby.
Thank you, Christian. It's good to be here.
Should I call you Bobby or Bobby Lee?
You can call me, let's go with Bobby because it's shorter.
Okay, sounds good. So what is your background in the topic of homeschooling and education? Why should our listeners be interested in what you have to say tonight?
Well, that's a good question. I was homeschooled my entire life from K to 12. My family is a large homeschooling family in the Midwest. I'm one of 11 kids. I'm the fourth out of the 11 of us. Almost 20 years ago now, my parents, who only had five kids at the time, or six even, decided that homeschooling was a better option for them than the private school they were in, so they decided to homeschool. It wasn't legal at the time here in Iowa. There were very heavy restrictions. You needed to fill out truancy paperwork for every day that your students weren't in class, that type of thing. And my parents decided that wasn't going to be feasible for them and decided to take it to court at that time and change the legal code here to make homeschooling a little less intimidating for folks. And they went to court. Their case was dropped eventually. The judge specifically told them he refused to let them plea it out because they would establish a legal precedent he didn't want to see. But there were some lingering effects of it. They did do away with a good deal of the paperwork and legislation and regulation on homeschooling here in Iowa because of their case. So after that, being homeschooled my whole life, my family took a strong stand on it. My dad was a vocal proponent of it. We convinced a lot of folks to homeschool. We talked to a lot of folks about homeschooling. We gave a lot of seminars and lectures, and it was always part of my childhood growing up. And then when I graduated from college, I had a degree with an emphasis in Christian education and took that. And now I work at one of the largest homeschooling companies in the world, and I've been there for about 3 years. And in that role, I talk to, 10,000 homeschoolers a year probably in a one-on-one setting. And then I go around the country to homeschooling conventions and talk to them there and teach workshops at homeschool conventions as well. So I'm immersed in this from my earliest memories as a child until what I do on a daily basis. It's a passion of mine, definitely.
Well, you do indeed sound very qualified to talk about this. As a homeschooler and someone who works in that industry, I take it you're not a fan of public schools, or what goes under the name of public schools, probably government schools is a better term. Let's talk about government schools before we get into the problems with homeschooling. And first, we'll talk about some theological issues that you see with sending your kids to government schools.
Sure. Most folks have gone to a government school, were educated by one, and have never really given any thought to why they do this. It's something Bobby Bockham actually makes the point. It's one thing that 90% of Christians agree on. Why is it that, Christians can't agree on anything, but 90% of Christians do agree on this? Why is that? Where did it come from? In reality, it's been one of the biggest con jobs in the history of our country. It's gone back to the 1600s is when this started. Ironically, the church's opposition to it has gone back that far as well, but the folks that oppose it are equally forgotten, along with the other heroes of the faith of the past. R.L. Dabney was an outspoken opponent of government education. Some of the theological reasons would be, and the strongest one these days, is that this is a responsibility of the family. This is not a responsibility for the government or even for the church. It's not a delegable authority to give away. We're not allowed to give up the training and raising of our children to another body of men even if we liked what they were saying, or even if we agree with most of what they were saying, we don't see a very clear scriptural pattern there that they would be able to give that off to somebody else. And so that's something that most families don't give a lot of attention to, and that's because they've been trained by the system to think that it's normal to give your kids away for, you know, 8 hours a day for 12 years. It's the family's job. The Bible gives it to parents. He does not give it to institutions. He does not give it to governments. He does not give it to you know, the Republic. He gave it to families, and that's something the church doesn't want to talk about and something most people have forgotten. Well, I do have two other points I could make on this. Even if you don't agree, and most of the church doesn't, that child training is a non-delegable duty, you do have to see a consistent biblical theme to avoid evil, to flee from evil, to give no provision to the flesh, to train up your mind after Christ, to think his thoughts after him. All of these things preclude exposing our children to this worldview in a learning capacity. Yes, they're going to bump into those things at work. They're going to bump into those things in their adult lives. But that's when they should be approaching them in an attacking capacity, not in a learning or being instructed capacity. So even if you don't believe in the trustee family, even if you don't see it as non-delegable, there is still an open violation of all of those injunctions in the scriptures that it's not, we're not to expose our children to these things. And finally, the one that nobody likes to talk about, it is always worth noting that government education is federally funded. And so even if they were teaching things we agreed with, and even if we thought it was the state's job to do this for us, and even if they were turning out a better product than a family could, it's stolen property we're receiving, and it's not acceptable. Most folks, they pay plenty in local property taxes for their education. I'm not saying they don't pay enough, but they never quite make up the total of it, and the federal government inevitably ends up bailing out local school districts to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I completely agree. Most people don't look at that aspect of whether you're culpable for participating in these stolen goods. Let's talk now about some practical reasons of why you shouldn't send your kids to public school. Forget the theology for a while. I know we can't do that fully as Christians, but what are these public schools turning out? What are the practical reasons to avoid them?
Well, the thing we hear most in corporate homeschooling is the failure academically. Obviously, we know that on a global scene, we spend more on education and have less to show for it than any other civilized country. I use that term loosely. America spends about $10,000 a student based on projections for 2013. Department of Education budget for 2010 was almost $600 billion. In comparison with the rest of the world is turning out for a fraction of the cost, we're ranked ninth and tenth, I believe, in math and science. So if it were working, that'd be an argument in its favor, but since it's an abysmal failure in the math and the sciences, all we have now is the arts and culture and sports. I mean, we worship the god of sports in education these days, and that's definitely shown. I rarely have to argue with anybody about, you know, how they'll do better as a homeschooler. It's a foregone conclusion now in the education circles. They're not worried about their kids not having an education now. They're just worried about their kids getting beaten up at school, drugs, all sorts of variety of problems.
Right.
I rarely hear, if they homeschool, will they turn out stupid? Now, I hear all the time, my kid is stupid and I need to homeschool them to fix it. So, and it's shockingly blunt to hear these parents say, my child is 2 years behind. My child is 3 years behind.
Right.
And they're not even upset at the school that did this to them. But that's a major practical concern.
So they're telling you they're telling you that their kid's way behind, but they're not upset with the public school who did it?
No, they have this I would say almost sick and twisted loyalty to the school. They're far more likely, in fact, to blame their students, one particular
right.
teacher, one particular bully in the classroom. They're going to pick on one thing. Oh, my student has ADD. My student is on medication. Something very specific and detailed. It could never be a systemic failure, even though their school as a whole, is turning out the same results across the board. They like to exonerate their own school because they usually went to that school. I find that's often the case. I often ask that, did you go to the school yourself? And they say, oh, yes, I did. And I say, oh, okay, I see.
Any more practical reasons to avoid public schools before we continue?
I think a major one that folks don't touch on is the funding aspect. Financially, our country cannot afford to continue running these brick-and-mortar schools. The debt load is crippling small, local, rural communities with a tax base simply can't service such a high debt load. From the unions who won't take a pay cut, federally mandated special ed programs, nurses, psychologists, sports programs, including, I mean, most folks don't calculate the cost of sports. They think of it as a tack on, but when you consider coaches, trainers, busing, equipment, security, it's overwhelming. The new school lunch programs that I've heard a good deal about from students that I talk to, all of it is unsustainable, even if it were successful, even if it did turn out a product we could be proud of. It's simply not affordable, even if we loved it, even if it was working.
We have a huge public school presence in the township in which I live, and one of the criticisms of living here, of course, is the high property taxes, and that's because they keep building new, huge, brick, prison-looking schools everywhere, and there's one in particular, a high school that I actually graduated from, unfortunately. They have built a football stadium. I mean, it's not quite a NFL or a college, but it's a really substantial football stadium because sports, especially football, is so important around here, and it's out of control, and people always complain about, we don't think we should have built that stadium because now our property taxes are higher, but yet no one thinks about, maybe we should just reject the public school system altogether. Really crazy. We're going to now talk about some objections to what we're saying. We're saying don't send your kids to public schools. So here are the three or four common refrains. In fact, I'll have you tell me the first one. What's the first thing people say to you? What's the first thing they're worried about when you decide to pull your kid out of government schools?
The thing we hear most often, and but far and away, is the salt and light argument. My child has a powerful Christian witness for his classmates and teachers. When you discuss an imperative of any kind to homeschool instead of send your children to the government education system, you will inevitably hear, but no, my child is salt and light. I want to pull them out for a few months, one more semester. I'm going to fix this learning gap, and then we're going to put him back in because he is a powerful witness for Christ in his classroom. He's brought six kids to youth group and five kids to church, and it's heard every time you bring up the concept of homeschooling, especially with a parent who's not necessarily suffering from anything academic or bullying, but maybe is moving or a military family. They are still ideologically wedded to the system, and so they want to get back to it as soon as possible. So they may homeschool for a time, but the salt and light argument is what people bring up every time. Honestly, in my opinion, this is what pastors and teachers and administrators, this is how they appraise their consciences, yeah, about saying nothing, taking a paycheck, yep, and ignoring the problems that are happening.
So that's probably, I should have rephrased that. I was thinking of comebacks from unbelievers. They will typically say, well, what about socialization? But yeah, you're right. When you're talking to believers, they're going to say, well, we need to be salt and light. That's a good point.
Well, most of the folks that are considering homeschooling consider themselves to be evangelicals. I very rarely speak to anyone that doesn't at least think they are, you know, at least think that, you know, I'm a good Christian person. I want my child to be Christian too. So most people, and especially they have this impression of homeschoolers as being extremely, you know, extremely pious Christian people. So that's the first thing they throw out to try to convince us in the homeschooling world that they're homeschoolers too. You know, they want to have currency in the conversation. They assume that we're, you know, these fundamentalist Baptist folks that are really hung up on that concept. And so they throw that out there first thing. And I honestly believe most folks that we consider homeschooling do consider themselves to be evangelicals. That is the first thing we hear. And we hear that specific argument probably 10 to 1 to any other argument or any other comeback. I'd be happy to interact with that or move on.
Would you like to say anything about the socialization concern?
Well, that is definitely something that still hangs in people's minds. People still think, oh my, you know, inevitably they throw out a horror story. Oh, I knew this homeschool kid who, you know, couldn't barely speak English and couldn't even, you know, shop at Walmart and be normal like everybody else. I would usually just respond with, yeah, you might not end up with what the world considers a normal child, and that would be the greatest blessing of your homeschooling endeavors. It's not even worth really going on the defense on this one at all. Just attack it instantly. Point out the fact that the child is literally these days, according to the Department of Education, safer outside of a public school than inside one. You can point out teen pregnancy rates, drug use, bullying. I mean, if that's socialization, we don't need it. You know, it's a clear, at this point, whenever somebody does say that, and it's rare, but when they do, it might be once a week, I hear that, and I instantly say, is that the kind of socialization you want your child around? And they think for about 5 seconds, and they go, oh, wait a minute, he got beaten up 2 weeks ago. You know, they're talking about this and that in the locker room. They're doing this or that behind the school. He hates the bus. You know, in their mind fills with things. I don't even have to list anything. Their mind tells them the story of why socialization, or at least that type, is not what their children need. They don't need their kids to walk around like zombies, incapable of speaking to anyone more than a year or two older than they are. They don't need their kids to be sullen for the whole, you know, 12 through 18 years old period. I think most parents, if you think about it and throw it back on them, instantly see that fall apart.
This is really interesting because you're saying that you hardly hear that objection from those who with whom you interact because you're dealing mainly with Christians. But it seems that from my perspective, I get challenged by my pagan friends, and they say, well, what about socialization? And what they're talking about, of course, is not you need to get your kids in a school where they're going to get pregnant or have drugs, but they're saying you need to associate with people that aren't like you. Your kids need to come into contact with other religions and other races, and you're too solitary and insular. So that's really their concern. So do you have any responses to these people who are basically pushing us to be more multicultural and inclusive and pluralistic?
Sure. I have an out on that one. I just say, well, you know, I called you today and I call about 100 strangers a day. So you are capable of socializing even outside of your comfort zone after having been homeschooled. I do hear that. If I hear it at all, I hear it from fathers who have this, you know, again, you probably hear it again from men as well. You can point out, again, the higher crime rates of some of those other people groups. You can point out the high, extreme percentage of ethnic crime in southern schools particularly. It's a known fact in homeschooling, in corporate homeschooling, that homeschooling is code word for white flight for most of the South. They don't want to call it that. They don't want to admit that's what it is. They defend themselves up one side and down the other, but in reality,
that's what it is.
That's the socialization they're trying to avoid. And if they could be honest, and they probably don't feel that they can, but if they could be honest with themselves and with whoever they're talking to, they would just state that and say, well, yes, there is socialization aspects that my child will be missing out on, specifically, you know, black gang violence, Muslim gang violence up in Michigan. I've heard that many times. Hispanic gang violence on the West Coast. I mean, we hear this stuff constantly, and that socialization has no value to somebody who values their child's spiritual or physical safety at all.
The socialization in public schools is really desocialization, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not the kind of socialization we're called to give our children at all. Are there any more typical objections to our stance?
Well, I do hear occasionally that the school has done an excellent job of training adults to feel incompetent. I hear all the time, well, the school asked if I was qualified to teach my student, or my mother-in-law, or the ladies at my church, or my pastor's wife, or I'm not sure I can do this, or I'm not sure I'm good enough. And that's, you know, that makes every parent feel inept and ill-prepared and unqualified and just terrified of the whole concept they're going to fail their child. And, I mean, after all, I hear this every day, literally. I can't remember algebra. How could I ever teach algebra, you know? Well, first of all, if they did such a great job teaching you, why can't you teach it? And if they failed you even then, 20, 30 years ago, and now they're failing your child enough that you're even talking to me on the phone.
Good point.
Why are we even giving them the time of day in the consideration here?
Right.
There's
this fascination with certification, isn't there? A mom may be one of the most brilliant people in the world, but if she's not certified by the state, then we're really concerned about her qualifications, aren't we?
Yeah, in fact, there are states, it's required that you have a college degree to homeschool, or that you get signed off on by somebody with a college degree. There are states where homeschool parents need to get a certification of some kind from the state. Here in the Midwest, it's very common that a homeschool parent needs to have their curriculum looked over by a government school teacher once, twice, sometimes three or four times a semester even. Usually this argument comes from somebody who is a teacher, was a teacher, is related to a teacher. I think they're honestly trying to justify the fact that teachers' unions are one of the biggest lobby groups in the country. They're trying to justify this whole class of educrats, government-trained specialists that have a piece of paper, that have a four-year college degree. I think it's fascinating to point out to them and to the homeschool moms that we have a new phenomenon on the scene of sorts. The graduates of the system are the ones now, finally, you know, all these generations later, that are actually running the system, and it's completely failing. So if their own graduates can't run it with basically unlimited money, and you don't feel qualified to teach the things they taught you, it's pretty clear that the need for qualified teachers is a myth, and it's just perpetuating their paychecks at that point.
Agreed. Here's a question that I have, because this is very common. You always have a few people, if not a few people in your church, that do some kind of work in the public school system. And in fact, I heard a sermon one time by Alistair Begg. I guess he's a Reformed guy, and it was on a radio station here, and he was talking about public schools and how some people want to give up on them. And he said, well, what would we do if we didn't have Christian teachers in public schools? As if that was the end of the argument, and because we need Christians in public schools, and we should keep the wicked system itself. What about this question of Christians who teach in public schools? Are they serving the enemy?
Well, I mean, obviously, in my opinion, I believe that they are. I think if pastors, seminaries, if the folks that are responsible for training adults to think about it would do their job, do some due diligence on who founded the schools, why they founded them, the philosophy behind them, you know, some of the doctrines of Unitarianism, for example, if they look into this, if they look into the products and the results we've turned out and the theft involved, it should be pretty obvious to any pastor anywhere that this needs to be repudiated and called what it is. This is theft, it's sin, it's wrong. You know, when people ask that, they say, well, you think it's a sin to work for the government school? They know instantly that we're intimidated by that question, because we're talking hundreds of thousands of professing Christians who work in the school system, right, who think they're making a difference. You would just, honestly, I respond with questions of my own, because it's kind of hard to answer that in
sure.
an absolute sense.
I gotcha.
I would just respond with, you know, is it immoral to expose your spiritually weak child to 15,000 hours of humanistic worldview training?
Right.
Yes. Is it wrong to receive stolen dollars? Yes. Is it wrong to facilitate a system destroying your family? By design? I mean, it's doing it intentionally? Yes. Is it wrong to agree in your government contract with the government that you're not going to speak the name of Christ in your workplace? Yes. I mean, is it wrong to perpetuate a system that's destroying you and your people intentionally? Absolutely. I mean, turn it back on them usually and make them, you know, answer for what they're arguing. And yeah. I would think personally that they're definitely an enemy of our, you know, maybe they're not an enemy of Christ in their minds, but
right.
they're definitely enemy of us and our people.
And there's also a distinction to make between somebody who is justifying the system, because you have two Christians. One Christian says, I'm justifying the system. I think we need to be there and salt and light and blah, blah, blah. And you may have somebody else who's a Christian and works in that, and they've come to realize that they're in a bad spot. But it isn't easy just to shut it down and find income the next day. So I'm sympathetic to those people who agree that it's an
right.
evil and they're on some path to start a new role. And I think a lot of us are in that position, whether it's public schools or just working for a big pro-faggot corporation.
Right.
I happen to work for a corporation that's pro-sodomy and pluralistic, and you can't talk about your faith unless your faith is some bizarre wacko faith. And I think that I'm best served elsewhere, and I need to get out, but I can't just close that volume and open a new volume tomorrow. So we are sympathetic to those teachers who realize they're in an evil system and they're trying to do something about it.
Exactly. I think I have a lot of patience and tolerance and understanding for folks that, you know, can be honest and admit, I don't like this. This isn't, I don't think this is godly. I don't think this is ideal. I wish I could get out of here. I wish I could speak openly. Those people have my respect and my sympathy. It's the folks that still use the salt and light argument, the folks that still justify,
yes,
you know, it's not all bad. My school is not like that. My student's not like that. I don't teach that in my classroom. Those are the folks that need to be strenuously opposed.
Agreed. Good distinction. Let's get on to the beef of the discussion now, homeschooling itself. We've discussed and dismissed government schooling. Let's talk about the solution that is failing at the time. Where do you want to start?
Well,
Bobby.
this is obviously the part of it that is the more controversial. There are dozens of resources on government education, and I plan to list some of those at the end. Homeschooling is something of a sacred cow, if you will, in the world of homeschooling. You're not allowed to take any shots at it. There are millions of Christians now that see the problem with government schools, and that is good news. The trouble is they see homeschooling in general to be the be-all and end-all answer to this. 20 years, homeschoolers have convinced themselves that they are the solution. Homeschooling is going to raise up an army. They're going to do so well that everyone will see, you know, that this isn't a viable option. They'll save our society. Just homeschooling will be, you know, give us a generation apart, and we'll change the world. Now, I have nothing against this optimism. I'm a postmillennialist myself, and I am convinced we must be a generation apart, every generation, not just one. And I am convinced as well that homeschooling is always a better option for any and every student than to sit in a government school. I've obviously dedicated my professional life to seeing that happen. So I have to always very much qualify this before I say anything negative about homeschooling. I've been extremely blessed by it. I'm a big fan of it. I've talked nearly 1,000 families into homeschooling myself, and I'll continue to do that. So don't take the following comments as, you know, being negative on homeschooling itself, but more to point out some flaws that I believe are weakening homeschooling and its potential impact on our culture. I think, honestly, there's something. One of the primary problems with homeschooling is that whole concept of being a generation apart. I have a big problem with the apart part of that concept.
What do you mean by that? The you say the generation apart?
Yeah, I think about 20 years ago, that was the prevailing theme of homeschooling, was we're doing this to raise a generation apart. We're doing this to raise a generation outside of the school, outside of the system, outside of the influence of all this paganism. Which I'm obviously, you know, a huge fan of getting kids out of that as many as possible, as soon as possible. The trouble is they raise them so far apart that they've actually lost that salt and light they're trying to be. They don't really know who the enemy is, how to engage them, how to interact, how to attack them, or even what victory would look like to even press for it. So okay. I think the apart is the trouble with that phrase is they're so far apart that we can't get them to engage anymore.
That makes sense. Well, we've titled this podcast informally Marxism and Homeschooling. What is it about homeschooling that you see trends of Marxism showing up?
That's a good question. I think the main emphasis of that, there is some feminism, and we can touch on that later. Just by default, it ends up being a strongly women-led movement. But I think the biggest thing would be the statism that you see very prevalent in homeschooling.
And by statism, we mean, I've got my own version of that, but what do we mean by Christians who are statists? And maybe some examples of that.
Sure. A Christian statist would be somebody that, I guess they would see whatever law the state makes, whatever decree the state makes, whatever rules and regulations the state puts in place as being acceptable, and, you know, in the modern understanding of Romans 13, they're going to submit to those. Okay. It's godly to submit to those. It's our duty to submit to those. So no matter how draconian, no matter how, you know, tyrannical, honestly, the homeschoolers will stand there and fill out the paperwork, and they'll submit, and they'll change their curriculum. They'll go along to get along, and that's an evidence of statism there.
There seems to be a really strong allegiance to the state. When the state speaks, when legislators speak, when the president speaks, when the White House says something, there's just a special attention given to it by Christians. Whenever there shouldn't be in and of itself anything special about it, unless it accords to the Word of God. And so there's a problem here with there's really an authority problem. Do you see any of this stuff creeping up in homeschool curriculum, statism?
I honestly think you can lay a lot of the blame for that at the foot of homeschooling curriculum. And obviously I work for a curriculum company, so I'm immersed almost as much in the curriculum as I am with talking to homeschoolers on a daily basis. A classic example of this would be Abeka. They're affiliated with Pensacola Christian College out of Pensacola, Florida. They are the biggest Christian textbook publishing company in the world. They are homeschooling. That is the personification of it. And when they started publishing their books in the 50s and 60s, homeschooling was illegal everywhere, and they were publishing for Christian classrooms. And when they finally started to sell their books, you know, directly to homeschoolers, they didn't adjust their curriculum at all. They kept it in the classroom setting. And the trouble is homeschooling was coming under attack at that time for being, you know, all these things we've mentioned before, you know, not salt and light, antisocial, all those things. To prove that we were going to turn out a better product academically, and also a big concern was, could homeschooling turn out good citizens? They were worried it would turn out a bunch of, you know, introspective, non-patriotic youth, and obviously to prove them all wrong, Abeka went above and beyond and wrote themselves a flag-waving, you know, Lincoln-loving curriculum that turns out, you know, student after student that's been immersed in this culture of you know, whatever the state says is right, and we need to prove that by being good Christian citizens. I have nothing wrong with being a good Christian citizen, as long as we define those terms to include, you know, biblical conduct. And when your nation is acting contrary to God's word, you know, blatantly, flagrantly, they're talking about Christian citizenship would actually require that you stand against them.
Hey, Bobby.
There's nothing.
How dare you speak evil of Abraham Lincoln? You come on my show and speak evil of Lincoln. There's a big movie about him right now. You should go see it.
I'm in a movie myself, and I have my own opinion.
I'm just trying to sidetrack you. Go ahead.
That's fine. I think Abeka personifies the trouble here is to prove that we're going to, you know, that we're good enough. We're trying to meet the bar of government education is how this started. This statism was, we're trying to prove that we can turn out good citizens too. And in reality, we've turned out turbo citizens. We've turned out these homeschoolers that they don't just love America like Joe Sixpack loves America. They love America because they were trained in their Christian faith to love America by Abeka from kindergarten on. Now, I don't want to pick on Abeka specifically, although I could go into great detail about that. Bob Jones University has the same flaws in their curriculum, the exact same philosophy at work, the exact same desire to prove themselves to all the wrong authorities and to show themselves approved to all the wrong structure. Other curriculum will be slightly better, and they take a neutral, that they claim it's a neutral, non-denominational position. But that just leaves the child with, you know, without being equipped at all. You know, now we have this neutral, watered-down, irrelevant sort of education that usually ends up because they're, you know, socializing with, yeah, good word there, they're socializing with kids that use Abeka or Bob Jones or some of these other big names. They're going to end up statist as well because they're still immersed in that statist culture, even if they're using one of the neutral curriculums.
Before we move on, are there any good, well, you can't recommend something 100%, but are there any curricula out there you can pretty much trust that's not going to be multicultural, pluralistic garbage? We've used some stuff, and I forget the name of it. It's Amish stuff, and it's really simple, and the
Rod and Staff.
Okay, I think that's it. The men are presented as men. Women, they're definitely feminine, they're ladies, the children are submissive, and so we like that. We don't see any drive for miscegenation and pluralism, so what do you think?
Yes, I absolutely. If you're looking for a curriculum that is going to avoid that entirely, Rod and Staff is definitely the company. I think they're Mennonite, actually, not Amish, but
okay.
Right. all their illustrations and such are the same, so it doesn't much matter. That would be the cleanest curriculum in that regard. That curriculum is never going to have, you know, unnecessary and just gratuitous multiculturalism. They're not going to have any, you know, stories of, you know, of multicultural playmates and all of that. It'll be very,
and I haven't,
appropriate.
I haven't seen any statism or militarism in there either. Any kind of USA worship. Go USA. I haven't seen that at all.
Well, that would probably tie back to their theology, obviously.
Yeah, they are rabidly anti-war, aren't they?
Exactly. So they're not going to have a whole lot of statism, because to be statist, you'd have to take a position on all the wars we've been involved in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a solid one, definitely. Academically, it holds up pretty well.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, though, to a world full of, you know, people leaving the government school system, they look at those pictures of modestly dressed women and men in suspenders, and they scoff at such a rural, agrarian-looking curriculum. To people like us, it speaks to us, but to the average, you know, urban mom or suburban mom even, who's leaving the government school out of duress, not because she has an ideological conviction, that curriculum is not even really considered.
If my friends at work knew, if they got a hold of one of my children's books, they would definitely scoff and laugh. Because it needs to be a 40.
Before you move on from that, other curricula I could recommend pretty wholeheartedly is the McGuffey readers, obviously. Were in school systems for a decade, almost a century, honestly. Yeah. And they were republished in 1991. Those are very affordable. They're reading primers, and they're those are very solid. So if you're looking for affordable and solid content and no multiculturalism, no pluralism, McGuffey's are fairly safe from what I recall.
That sounds good. It's really good to get some opinions from you on this because it's because so many Christian homeschoolers don't really think too closely about avoiding statism and Marxism in their curricula. It's really hard to find any good advice. So this is a very valuable interview.
Well, I think I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm happy to be on. I think the reason people don't care about that, again, is because they were trained by the system that they're trying to run away from now, again, out of duress. That's something that I cannot stress enough. The average homeschooler today is not homeschooling out of conviction. They're not homeschooling because they've had an ideological switch. They're homeschooling because they have a bad math teacher. Their child got beaten up. They're moving. Their school is failing. We call them refugee homeschoolers. They're not homeschooling because they have any firm convictions about it one way or the other. They're running away from something. And part of my job is to ask, what would you like to see in a homeschooling curriculum? And inevitably they say, or else I'll ask, what would your ideal homeschool day look like? And they say, ideally I'd be at work and my student was back in school. They're just waiting for whatever problem it is to go away. And so an ideological switch is not happening anymore. Now we say the Pledge of Allegiance in our homeschools every day instead of, we worship the flag at home instead of at school. We read The Light and the Glory and we study David Barton at home. And we just forget that tyranny exists and it's here and it's now and it's come all wrapped up in a flag like we were warned. And honestly, and even if you get past that and you get into the evangelicals who pull their kids out because they're teaching evolution or the sex education curriculum is offensive, they get all wrapped up in the statism too. And whether or not Washington and Jefferson founded this to be a Christian nation or not, it is long past the point of relevance. If we don't turn out students who realize this isn't a Christian nation and it's our duty to attack large parts of the system, then all of our homeschooling efforts have been in vain. And all the conventions and all the blogs and all the curriculum has been pointless. And that's, people don't look at the curriculum content because they're not homeschooling out of conviction. And even those that are homeschooling minorly out of conviction don't look at statism as a threat because it's easier to just wrap yourself up in the heroes of the past and ignore our duties today.
Excellent. We have a mutual friend, Bobby, in the chat room. His name is Justin Cottrell, and he says that we burn flags at our homeschool. So,
well, in my homeschooling, we burn more than one flag ourselves. So, God bless you and keep it up.
That's good stuff. I don't want to touch too much on this because I know you may be going on Scott Terry's Christian Farm and Homestead program soon. But one issue that really bothers me in an institution which I recently left is the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, because I noticed a lot of militarism in what they do. Do you have any comments on that?
Sure. The HFLBA is directed by Michael Ferris. Obviously, they're out of Northern Virginia. He is basically, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association is what we in the industry call homeschool insurance. If you have the HSLDA for $125 a year, if the government ever comes and takes your kids, they'll cover you. They'll that $125 buys you a lawyer in the event you need trouble. So, the trouble is that Mr. Ferris is dispensationalist and he doesn't see victory as possible, much less as something that should be worked for with the expectation of achieving. So, in my opinion, he's building a nice little fundraising racket on the fear of these homeschoolers. He has no intention, ideologically and theologically, he can't have any intention of rolling back homeschooling laws to any biblical boundaries. His eschatology precludes that from even being a goal, much less a result. I mean, he may speak that way, but, at homeschool conventions, and I've been at many, many homeschool conventions with him and heard, many people come out and say, oh, that was great. And then you realize that he's been saying this exact same speech for 20 years, and he's made a great deal of money out of this. And We see this all the time. An email, he sends out an email not every 3 or 4 days with a scare story in it. A family somewhere is being threatened by their school district. HSLDA promises to help them. At the bottom of the email, please click here to donate $20 in addition to the $125 you already paid to help this family out. But the laws never really improve.
Just about how much money does this guy make? Do you know, Bobby?
Oh, I could look into it. I honestly haven't. I couldn't remember off the top of my head.
All right. Yeah. No problem.
If you talk about 4 million homeschool families, $120 a year, and I would say a solid 85% of homeschool families are members in the HSLDA. I mean, on the membership dues alone, they're pulling in. They're not eating rice and beans like many homeschoolers are, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I've always had a big problem, and this is something that Robert Finkelfin and I have discussed offline, of people who make a lot of money from people who are so desperate they're willing to pay anything. So lawyers and doctors and depression and anxiety counselors, for example. And it turns me off when I see this. For example, we know about the recent hurricanes in New England with Hurricane Sandy, and everyone's encouraging everyone to donate to the Red Cross. And guess what? The CEO or president of the Red Cross, I'm not sure her name, but she makes very close to $1 million a year. It's over $900,000 a year. Is that really necessary for someone who heads an organization that helps desperate people to make so much money off the backs of donators?
Not at all. No, you'll see that phenomenon, and we call them industries. That's a homeschool industry. I'm in a homeschool industry. There's the pro-life industry. There's the pro-gun industry. There's the pro-family industry. There's the pro-marriage industry. Those people have no incentive to get themselves out of a job. And the desperation thing of a homeschooler and of certain people, doctors and lawyers, desperation adds an extra level of shame to the whole thing. But anytime you see a big, social issue being touted, the folks on the industry side of preventing it or stopping it or whatever, they have no financial incentive whatsoever to end the problem, only to delay it and prolong it to make as much money as possible, as long as possible. When their theology encourages that, when their eschatology specifically encourages that, it's even more predictable that you can expect them to accomplish very, very little for all the money that they gather in. And then worse, it's very likely they're going to have to use fear as a motivating factor. They're going to have to scare all their constituents to constantly be donating money, because the average homeschool family hasn't had a threat from having their kids taken away for homeschooling in decades. I mean, it's not realistic. It's legal in all 50 states, and homeschoolers are famous for dotting their I's and crossing their T's. So the average homeschool family has nothing to worry about compared to 20 years ago when they were doing it, against the law. But he sends out his emails every 3 days and scares everybody. And
I was a little bit turned off by his anti-Ron Paul stuff. He seems to be a guy who wants to have a federal solution or nothing. And that really upset me when he said, well, Ron Paul doesn't like homeschooling because he opposes I think they got him on both his stance on homeschooling and abortion. And Ron Paul basically took the constitutional approach and said it's up to the states. And Ferris had a hissy fit about it.
Well, Ferris is a big fan of something he calls the Parenthood Amendment, not to be confused with the Personhood Amendment. The Parenthood Amendment is a constitutional amendment that his group has been pushing for years. Now, think of it from his eschatological point of view. What are the odds that we will ever get a federal constitutional amendment about homeschooling? What think of the statistical odds. We have, 20-some million homeschool kids in America every day being bused back and forth. And how many kids homeschool? How many people are graduates of homeschooling? There's almost no allegiance to homeschooling outside of the 4 million people doing it.
Yep.
So what he knows is this. If I put a constitutional amendment on the table and push for it and push for it and push for it at a federal level, I can fundraise off that for 20 or 30 years before I ever get enough traction to actually have to go anywhere with it. So I can milk this till the cows come home, but not be expected to turn out any results because there's no base to motivate. I mean, from a political standpoint, he's a genius. From our standpoint, that's just shameful and cowardly, and you can point to the eschatology, or honestly, that's just shameful. I don't care who you are or what your eschatology is. That's tactically speaking, he's intelligent, but his attack of Ron Paul was so transparent to folks that are in homeschooling and realize what's going on that, if Ron Paul had succeeded and put things back at a local level or a state level, his Parenthood Amendment would have gone away, and with it, the greatest fundraiser he can ever hope to have, because, as I pointed out earlier, there's not much immediate threat to homeschoolers at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's got one last horse to ride, and Ron Paul was going to dismount him.
Somebody on his staff did a post about vote. You know, he was encouraging all Christians to go vote. And I guarantee you, if Ron Paul was on the ballot and a bunch of Christians went out there and voted for Ron Ballard or for Ron Paul, his message would have been something different than vote. They would have been scolding us for voting for a particular candidate. Whenever statist, Marxist Christians say go vote, what they mean is go vote for the Republican on the ticket. That's what they mean.
Exactly.
Let's continue our interview. This is very good. What do you know about universities and colleges that feed students into federal positions?
It's a foregone conclusion oftentimes with homeschoolers. Most of the big curriculum companies have realized how this works, and they all have their own colleges to kind of, you know, perpetuate the system. Pensacola Christian, Bob Jones University, Michael Ferris has his Patrick Henry College in Virginia. They all cater to the graduates of this movement they're running. And what happens to these graduates of homeschooling, this best and brightest of the crop? These kids have theoretically, thanks to Rebecca and Bob Jones, been educated about the Constitution and the rule of law. They go into these colleges, and they're very quickly funneled into government jobs on the Republican side of Capitol Hill. Ferris himself bragged that during the Bush II administration, one in six of his graduates was working for the Bush administration. Now, anybody with a biblical concept of government or the rule of law or a biblical interpretation of the Constitution or any of that homeschoolers are supposed to be, you know, proud of.
No, I'm sorry. One in six from which college?
Patrick Henry College out of Virginia.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And like I said, it's not just incredible as a statistic. It's incredible when you consider that those are the best and brightest of homeschooling. These are the kids that, you know, these are the kids that are supposed to be standing in opposition to the Capitol Hill type, to the whole crowd. And this is something that folks don't like to point out as a rule is, you know, 25 years we've had the moral majority funneling their best and brightest minds into these you know, state-minded colleges, and from the colleges, funneling them onto Capitol Hill or into these pro-life industries, the pro-gun industry, pro-family industry. And somehow these best and brightest of us for 25 years have accomplished absolutely nothing. So the statism of their curriculum, plus the statist education they must be getting at these colleges, funnels them right into the statist Republican Party, and we lose all the success of homeschooling. Is evaporated into 25 years of wasted effort, and they drink the Kool-Aid, and all of a sudden we have nothing to show for 20 years of homeschooling. We have no generation apart. We have no group of folks to point to as different or as attempting to live out the faith differently. We just have really, you know, biblically based statists running some of these groups, and that's about all we have to show for the salt and light generation we're supposed to be building here.
Wow, so true. So true. This is Tribal Theocrat Live. We're interviewing Bobby Lee Swagger about homeschooling and public schooling and education in general from a Christian perspective. And we've talked about some important issues regarding both public schools and homeschooling. And basically what we've talked about so far is that statism and Christianity are mutually exclusive. So if you can't be a statist and a homeschooler at the same time. And one thing that really bothers me about this, we just got through election month, and we hear a lot about pro-life, pro-life, pro-life. And every single Republican, of course, they're pro-life. Even Democrats are pro-life. But when it comes to the lives of those in Gaza or Libya or Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan, not so much pro-life, are we? Because we like to bomb them and civilian bomb people with drone planes. It's inconsistent to call yourself a Christian, and I know I'm on a hobby horse here, but I can't believe Christians have the audacity to call themselves pro-life and even be single-issue people pro-life when it comes to abortion, but they have no problem in supporting the U.S. military that has done nothing in the last 100 and so years but invade foreign nations who did nothing to us, occupy their soil, rape and pillage and murder. It's a disgrace. And I'll tell you how I really feel some other time. And of course, if you challenge these wars, Bobby, they will call you an American. You're not a patriot. So what, in your opinion, should patriotism really look like for Christians?
Well, I honestly think that's probably a question for better minds than mine. I would argue that it has to be defined biblically, obviously, and once you've done that, you would lose most homeschoolers because they want the security of the state. They want that, and they crave it, because most parents are products of the state education system. Most Christians, if you ask them to define patriotism, would say, you know, waving the flag, sending one in four of your kids off to fight for the military, maybe even one of your daughters, honestly. And it would never occur to them to say patriotism should include standing up for, you know, the Constitution or the rule of law or, you know, some of the founding principles that the country is founded on. They don't mind abandoning those if the state tells them it's okay. Right. And a Christian obviously should have his, you know, his entire definition of patriotism tied directly to the Bible, tied directly to a Christian definition of these things. If he did, he couldn't support and endorse these things. He could certainly not send his child to fight any wars.
Yep, that's it. It's called the Christian worldview, applying it to all aspects of life. Some concept comes up called patriotism. Well, what does the Bible have to say about patriotism? It's that simple. What does the Bible have to say about wars and just war and patriotism? So great answer. I get pretty hot talking about the recent wars. It's incredible.
Unfortunately, I only get paid to talk about homeschooling, but I could talk about that for a while too.
I understand. Well, let's talk about, do you have any other aspects of Marxist homeschooling you want to address before we move on?
Well, definitely. Something that, it's a rather recent phenomenon, so I can't say where it's going, and I can't get any numbers on it because it's not something anybody's really tabulated. But I've noticed the last two or three years when out at homeschooling conventions, there is it boggles the mind how much multiracial adoption is going on in the world of homeschooling that is far in excess of the general population. Now, I know it's popular thanks to Hollywood and thanks to, you know, Brangelina and whoever those people are in Hollywood. It's popular in the rich and sometimes the liberal homes, but it's getting a strong traction in homeschooling. And part of it comes from, you know, these pro-family groups like the Vision Forum crowd pushing that in their catalog. And then you've got, you know, Vadi Bakum, and you've got all this white guilt about, you know, after the earthquake in Haiti, I literally know 20 or 30 different little, you know, Haitian children that were adopted into homeschooling families in Iowa alone. And that's just one state I knew of, just because I have a lot of friends there. It's a staggering thing. When I'm around at homeschooling conventions, I see, you know, homeschool families with four or five biological children, you know, that look like, act like, behave like their parents. And then you've got two or three, you know, tag-alongs that don't behave like. And that's the crucial difference. At a homeschool convention, those children stand out, obviously. They don't look like, but most importantly, they don't behave like most homeschool children. I don't know how that's going to turn out. I don't know where this came from. I know there's some vocal proponents of homeschooling. Archie Spill Jr., for example, vocal proponent of homeschooling that has adopted interracially himself. I don't know what their goal is or what they think they're trying to accomplish, but it's growing, and it's far in excess of the general population, definitely.
That is a big topic, and I would refer people who are interested in that issue to spiritwaterblood.com, where the author of those brilliant posts lays bare the stupidity of all the Christians, so-called Christians, out there advocating racial genocide of our people. Check that out for sure. We mentioned briefly dispensationalism. Is there anything else you want to discuss about dispensationalism and its effects on homeschooling? We saw Ferris. Obviously, if you want Israel to have a homeland, because that has some eschatological significance, then you're going to favor U.S. intervention to help Israel. What else can you say about that, if anything?
Well, yes, there's definitely the Israel aspect of dispensationalism, and Ferris personifies it clearly. Another aspect is obviously the lack of victory, the lack of vision. If it's all supposed to get worse before it gets better, honestly, if they were consistent, I don't know why they bothered to pull their children out. I mean, leave them in there, let it burn, you know, let's all just, you know, hold hands and sing Kumbaya while the sun sets on society. Dispensationalism obviously, you know, has an Israeli, you know, a pro-Israeli bent, but it's also this defeatist, determinist idea that there's nothing we can do, there's no hope. I'm just pulling my kids out to make sure they stay Christians, but I don't anticipate them, you know, having an impact, doing anything differently. We need to just expect the end. And that's common. Dispensationalism is the worldview of a Beckett curriculum and Bob Jones, and that is, that educates, I think the combined total of those two would be more than 70% of homeschoolers are using those. So this defeatist sort of attitude, this attitude that we can't do anything because we'll never succeed. So you turn out homeschoolers that, yes, they may not be actively, you know, the most liberal of adults, but they're certainly not going to hold back the tide of liberalism either.
You and I first spoke on, you know, a few months ago. I called you and you mentioned something about the Pinko Plinko homeschooler. Can you summarize that for our listeners?
Yes, this is my own interpretation of a problem that homeschooling, an arm of Marxism that has crept into homeschooling. If you think of a Plinko game with you know, the flat board with all the pegs sticking out, and you drop the disc in from the top, and that analogy carries to homeschooling in amongst the culture of homeschoolers. As long as the slot at the bottom says homeschooler on the bottom, we can't say anything about how they got there. We can't say anything about, you know, where that slot is in the range of homeschooling. So there's this egalitarian idea that all homeschooling is equal. As long as you're homeschooling, you're successful. As long as you're not in the government school system, you're winning, your kids will be great. Obviously, I would disagree strongly with that, but the goal here is not simply to remove them. The goal here is to turn out a completely different type of student. And to do that, we need to knock out some of those Plinko pegs, some of them that would include statist curriculum, that would include a statist college, that would include an obsession with accreditation or an obsession with certification on mom's part. Ending up in the slot called homeschooler is not good enough. We've shown 25 years of homeschooling has not turned out a generation of notably different, you know, products. We need to level out some of those pegs so that the slot at the bottom is a better type of homeschooler that requires more of them. We can't have this, and honestly, this really does kind of tie back to feminism if you think about it. Because it's a largely women-driven movement now, as long as, you know, all these women basically pat each other on the back and, you know, you can do whatever you like, honey, and you just pick whatever curriculum works for you, and you just, you know, everybody's on their own path, and everybody's taking their own journey, and it's this big, you know, coffee shop women's Bible study mentality where nobody wants to be the mean one that says, that's not it, that's not why we homeschool, that's not why you homeschool, that's not the product we need to turn out. Everybody wants to get along, and nobody is allowed to point out any of this stuff, and that's, you would be shocked if you were on some of these homeschooling blogs of these moms, this idea, this, you know, extremely tolerant of all types of views, and I've seen homeschoolers excuse, you know, sodomites homeschooling. I've seen homeschool Christian women excuse, you know, evolutionary curriculum being used. I've seen homeschool women just totally abandon all the principles of homeschooling because they don't want to be seen as judgmental. They don't want to exclude anybody. They don't want to be seen as having attacked the movement. And so these Pinko Plinkos, everything has to go for them. They're the most inclusive, tolerant group you've ever seen, and they would, you know, it would be antithetical to their worldview to even consider condemning any type of curriculum or methodology or result. And that's something that needs to go away if homeschooling is ever to be the salt and light it wants to be.
It does. We don't need Pinko Plinkos. When I think of Plinko, I think of a .22 caliber gun. Plinking. So what we
that
need
that might
is,
be a better solution, but that's probably another.
Well,
podcast.
I mean, if we don't like Pinko or Pinko Plinkos, what do we need? Like 45s or 50 calibers? What's Let's talk about another statement you made on the phone with me a few months ago. That is that better no education at all than a statist one. What do you mean by that?
Well, the key there is the definition of the word education. By today's standard, that involves curriculum, classrooms, chalkboards, all of that. Even in homeschooling, that involves, you know, soccer practice and all this extracurricular to prove that you're keeping up with the Joneses, and it involves the latest technology in your curriculum, and it involves homeschool co-ops and all that. And when I was a child, my dad used to, you know, because we were a very vocal proponent of homeschooling, my dad would be giving me seminars, and he would say, you know, from the podium quite often, well, if my child can read the Bible, I'd consider our homeschooling a success. And I sat there, and I was like, well, then why do I have to do math every day? But I saw once I went to college, I went to college in an East Coast town that had a very large Christian college or university in it, and I saw, you know, mindless kid after mindless kid who had been homeschooled or private schooled even, and they were no different at all. And I would rather a child never went to school and never, you know, had the homeschool experience that modern homeschoolers think it needs to be, and just let his education be a solid biblical worldview introduction lived out in his parents' life, in their home, and let his formal instruction go by the wayside. These days you've got, you know, 12-18% unemployment. Everybody has a high school diploma. Obviously it's not the paperwork. You've got homeschoolers that are turning out no different than everybody else. So obviously it's not, you know, it's not the status curriculum. There has to be something more to it, and most homeschoolers don't have that attitude. They have the attitude that, well, the government's not doing keeping up their end of the bargain that I'm paying my taxes for, so I'm going to recreate the same thing at home. And not at all. I would rather my child, you know, watched my life and had no other education at all than, you know, the scriptures and an example. And you can let that status education go, because otherwise they're just as lost as they were in a government school anyway.
Whenever we first got involved with homeschooling, we thought we had to go out and get a huge chalkboard and a bunch of desks. And that isn't necessarily the case. It doesn't mean that you're disorganized, but what's wrong with the kitchen table? What's wrong with being resourceful and not blowing money? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have, you've talked about the abandoned role of fathers in homeschooling, and it's typically the case that moms do most of the work. It's the case with my house. So this is where I'm asking you to really chafe me. So lay it on me, rebuke me. What's the role of fathers in homeschooling? Be gentle.
Well, I feel terrible. No, I'm going to, you know, set you aside because that wouldn't be helpful. I think there's a strong, initially it was a strong family-led movement. I mean, usually dad and mom went to court. Dad and mom, you know, decided to homeschool. Dad had to justify everything along with mom. Now that it's legal and acceptable, you know, obviously a great, huge proportion of the physical work of teaching and educating is going to fall on mom. But there's this, I mean, I'm ideologically of an agrarian conviction myself. I would argue that the family should try to be together as much as possible, and the kids and the wife work for the father's vision as much as possible. That obviously has not even traded homeschooling at all. So what you have is, you know, the kids, everybody wakes up in the morning, dad goes off in the car, dad doesn't get home till 5:15, mom does Bible study with the kids, she has them memorize their scripture verse, she's involved with the you know, her homeschool blog or the ladies' homeschool group at church, MOPS, whatever it might be, she has coffee and Bible study twice a week. You end up with a strongly women-led movement, you end up with very, and this is obviously, I can't cast blame on whether or not the father abandoned the role or the wife assumed it, but there's not a self-conscious movement in homeschooling anymore to make sure the fathers are leading anything. In fact, I was at a homeschool convention here in the Midwest a couple of years ago where a homeschool comedian was giving a presentation, and he handed out stickers at the end that said, "My wife homeschools and she's my hero." And the word hero was, you know, filled up most of the sticker basically. And I was just appalled because that's really antithetical to what we're about here. Homeschooling is supposed to be about building families. And I understand honoring your wife, and I understand she does a great deal of extra work, and that's a rare thing anymore. I'm not saying she doesn't deserve honor. The terminology, though, and the type of men that are wearing it, and they're, you know, they're carrying their wife's purse and all the bags while she marches around and barks orders at him, and you can tell he has no idea what the kids do for curriculum. He has no idea what they're learning. He has no idea where they are. He just kind of playing this help me role to his wife. And I realize that homeschool conventions are a slice of reality, but there's that sticker kind of personified it. When you saw a man walking around, I mean, a hero is a masculine word to start with, a masculine noun. So it kind of encapsulated this, they were admitting and acknowledging that their wife was running the show, and that, you know, they looked up to her for all that she did. And there's something wrong there when the movement is being led by women. It has all these problems and it has all these, you know, unfulfilled expectations. And then the men wear a little neon sticker that says, "My wife homeschools and she's my hero."
Yeah.
You know, better terminology would have been, you know, we homeschool and our kids are different. I have no idea, but that was, that kind of encapsulated the problem. Thankfully, there are a few homeschooling, pro-family groups. I know Vision Forum has pointed this out. There are others that have pointed out this problem, but the problem isn't going away. And obviously there's a financial role here where dad has to work more than he would like, and dad has to be gone, and they can't afford to be self-employed I know more homeschool families would prefer that, but it's still a big problem, and it hasn't been addressed by the homeschooling movement itself.
I agree, and as uncomfortable as it is to hear, as a father, it's something we need to do, is get more involved in it. And so good for Vision Forum and other people for pointing that out. Of course, it's easier to say when you're a millionaire like Doug Phillips, but anyhow.
Yeah.
Sorry for that jab. In the interest of time, let's talk about pietistic aspects, and then we'll just summarize our evaluation of what's wrong with homeschooling, and then we'll move on to some positive aspects.
Sure. If you could ride the hobby horse of just war, I could ride this one for weeks, decades.
Go for it.
Pietism is in this aspect, it's a mental checking out, if you will, by homeschooling parents. They don't need to be culturally relevant, and I don't mean relevant in the term of hip and edgy and urban and any of that. I mean, they don't need to know what's going on in the economic world, in politics, in anything. They don't need to be aware or versant or standing against anything. They can check out because they are too spiritual and too holy and too, caught up in the things of the Lord, if you will, to actually have to worry about the world they're leaving their children to live in and the tools they've given their children to work with. You end up with a bunch of homeschool kids who have a quirky sense of humor, who make funny YouTube videos, who, might dress a little more modestly or listen to, Christian rock instead of regular rock music. But these kids, because of the pietism of their churches and their families, mom wears a denim skirt and mom has longer hair and so do the sisters, but they have no idea how to engage, defeat, attack anything about the culture around them. If they do have anything, it's a really, like we mentioned earlier, this statist David Barton view of American history where they can't realize that the culture they're idolizing in their mind is dead and gone, and the one in front of them needs to be attacked and repudiated and rebuffed on every front. This pietism has them convinced that, simply standing back here and having, these teenage boys with their fake swords and their fake armor from Vision Forum and this whole virtuous manhood stuff uselessness. I've been at homeschool conventions. These aren't 9-year-old boys. These are like 15-year-old boys that are completely, completely checked out of who the threat is, who the enemy is, how to fight them. They have no traction in how to even get started changing the culture because their parents have just checked out. They don't have to be. The biggest controversial thing they ever did was homeschooling, and they can't fathom any more than that. They can't expect any more of that. They don't have to read anymore. The most they need to do is once a year drive 4 hours one way to a homeschool convention or a Bonnie Bauckham lecture of some sort. And that's the end of it for them. And they don't realize if you didn't raise a statist and if you didn't put them in a statist school and didn't, send them off to work for the Republican Party, you still haven't created anything that's going to change anything. And not only that, but the conviction level of that graduate is not what it should be to even homeschool their own children. Yeah. They don't know how horrible the government education system is because they never were in it and never had any bad experiences. So they, when it comes time for their kids, I like being homeschooled, but, the school here is really good. I'll just put my kids in. And I hear this all the time. I was homeschooled my last 5 years of school or 4 years of school. My husband was too. We thought the school was okay, but we're going to pull them out now in third grade because we're moving. And you think, what sort of pietistic parents taught you in such a bubble, in such a void of anything relevant to the pressing issues of the day, of the church, that was an option for you? Like, there's been a massive failure when we have homeschool graduates putting their children in the government school system again. And I think pietism has a lot to be said for that. They like to wrap up their cowardice in holiness.
I despise pietism, so it's really glad to hear I have a comrade. Do you?
I can really go on about this, but I better not.
Yeah, it's enough to make your blood boil. We're going to talk about the encouraging aspects of homeschooling, but before that, one question from a guest named Charlie. What do you think about the science curriculum from Apologia?
That is a good question. That company, that is the most popular science in homeschooling right now. It is very solid. It's a 6 24-hour day creation. There are obviously technical aspects I could get into as to how it works for each family or its feasibility in large families or its cost. But worldview-wise, it's very solid. I know the man who wrote the curriculum was ideologically not necessarily anti-statist, but he saw, you know, the fundamental importance of a solid creation-based curriculum. If you lose that doctrine, or if you're weak on it, or if your kids can't defend it, maybe it's not a doctrine, but if you lose that, well, obviously it's a doctrine, but if you lose that emphasis, everything goes. And you know, for all animals, and you can't stop anyone from acting like animals. So it's a solid curriculum in that regard. I know the author had that in mind when he wrote it, was to make some really solid points there. I do know as well, he's not in charge anymore. And they are talking about expanding the Apologia curriculum line to run into other subject areas. I would not expect those to be as strong as the founders. And I wouldn't expect any future editions of Apologia to be as solid as the original.
Okay, very good. Let's talk about some encouraging aspects of homeschooling. We've been negative enough. What would you like to say about that?
Oh, I think I'm out of time. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
No. I feel terrible. Don't do that. Yeah, there are definitely still some encouraging aspects of homeschooling, especially what happens every other Friday at 12:01 in my bank account. No, not kidding. I'm kidding. I'm Dutch. Forgive me.
It's okay. You're
anyway,
good.
No, there are still some encouraging aspects of homeschooling. I don't want anyone who's currently homeschooling to be discouraged. There is a stronger family focus coming back to homeschooling, thanks in part, I hesitate to say this, but obviously to the Vision Forum folks and even homeschooling magic Negro Body Bottom. Also, the Family Integrated Church movement is bringing a lot of folks back to why we do what we do, and that's beneficial. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of any of those groups or what they stand for. Their multiculturalism and their latent statism is hard to swallow for me. But if it wakes up folks currently homeschooling as to why, so they don't leave, that's a good thing. And that family focus can't help but, you know, bring dads to focus on their home more and help make more moms conscious. You know, I don't think most women are conscious of how tempting it is to take over their husband's role in his absence, even unintentionally. And so if the family, you know, the Family Integrated Church and Vision Forum, if those folks can bring that to women's minds, that might help.
That sounds very reasonable. Anything else about encouraging aspects of homeschooling?
Yes, I think one of the perks of this unintentional perks, I think, of the pinko plinko type of homeschoolers is they don't have as much of a hive mentality as the first homeschoolers did. The first homeschoolers saw any attack on homeschooling or a curriculum or a company or anything as being an attack on homeschooling itself. Thankfully, homeschooling is diverse enough, and I hesitate to use that word, but it's diverse enough that you can get people away. You can point out things now that you didn't used to be able to say anything at all. People would just shut you down immediately with, well, then if you don't like that, you obviously must be in favor of government education. And thankfully, as homeschooling has broadened its base a little, again, I hesitate to say that, you can get people out, if you will. You can help them see a little clearer because they're, you know, they still have to deal with people across the spectrum, whereas the first generation of homeschoolers, they literally hid in their houses, you know, until 3 p.m. And they, you know, it was a whole different mentality. Now you can get people out a little easier. I think another aspect of that, another thing that helps that getting them out of the mentality or breaking one family out at a time is that, you know, as things worsen, our Republican conservative leadership has been, you know, just decimated in their credibility department. There's definitely a vacuum for this leadership in homeschooling. There needs to be a voice for this. And all of our tried and true leaders have failed. There's no college, there's no group, there's no, you know, hour of power we can point to save this. And as that happens, you know, more and more folks are looking, well, if we can't believe them anymore, where do we go? they're looking for what, you know, used to be considered radical alternatives. And you can see that in the popularity of Ron Paul with a pretty large fraction of the homeschooling crowd. And there's hope there is, you know, as our pathetic modern church abandons anything like biblical morality, anything like biblical worship, anything like biblical doctrine, more and more homeschoolers are going to be open to hearing things a little more, you know, as I'm sad to say this, but what we're saying is radical, and hopefully as their tried and true abandons them, we'll get more of them.
I agree. And I apologize again to the audio feed for the live listeners who can't hear. I do want to say, Bobby, that Holly Brannon says thank you. She acknowledges that she can't hear anymore, but she wants to thank you for what she's heard so far, and she'll be hearing the podcast soon, so maybe you could tell Holly. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Who's very welcome?
Holly is. Everybody is.
I'm sorry. It's really unfortunate they can't hear me, but she appears to acknowledge your comment there. Let's get into some steps that the homeschoolers must take to make things better, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. Well, there's obviously a lot of ideological shifts that need to happen at a local, you know, individual homeschool level, but most of that we can't expect until the leadership of homeschooling has acknowledged their complicity and their new purpose. I think there's three or four steps to that. The first one, and I think most importantly, is they have to espouse an eschatology of victory. If they can't see us overturning government schools, if they don't see that as a natural, necessary consequence of homeschooling, then they need to step down. If they see eventual defeat as our only outcome, they shouldn't be leading a movement that by definition, by its very inception, is trying to do something as radical as destroy government education. And you know, honestly, if every homeschooler I know who thought that would write to the leaders of homeschooling a letter telling them that, that would probably even go a long way.
Yeah, I would imagine that would have some serious impact. Any other steps that we can take to get things going in the right direction?
Sure. Well, another thing would be I deal with a lot of homeschool conventions. I go on a lot of homeschooling circuits. They need to stop treating the homeschool convention or lecture circuit like a gravy train. If they do their jobs well, they shouldn't have jobs anymore. And I don't want to hear Bobby Bottom saying these same things in 10 years.
Right.
Doug Phillips, too. I mean, since I was a small child, I watched him go from a young man with one or two children on his catalog, and now he's graying with a beard, and he's still repeating the same stump speech.
He's even starring in movies now, isn't he?
I'm sorry?
My wife told me that he was starring in a couple of movies, like small B movies, or she was reading the, he's in, or some documentary or some slash movie, but he's the head star.
No.
Oh, yeah. Check out the latest catalog. It's amazing.
Oh, my word.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
That's just terrible. I mean, obviously that's a cash and go type of operation for him. He can take his check and leave and just put himself on autopilot and auto speech and be done with it. But he shouldn't be. He should see himself as a failure that he's still saying the exact same thing 15 years later. And honestly, if you look at his ministry, he's becoming more of a statist as time goes on. Much more of a multiculturalist. I mean, you see the most ridiculously, culturally dissonant things in his magazine now.
Yeah, we have a post up on tribaltheocrat.com a couple of years ago about he and some other, what's his name? Can't think of it. Popular evangelical leader were down in Haiti after the earthquake, trying to solicit Christians to give, open up their purses and their wallets, and it really bothered me. But go ahead.
Yeah, it's been a disappointment, definitely, to anyone who's watched that specific ministry. It's been a disappointment.
Yeah. Okay. Any more steps that homeschoolers need to take to make it better?
Sure. Those who aren't dispensationalists must reject at least reject pietism. That's absolutely crucial to the folks that are. I know a lot of folks that are amillennial or postmillennial. You have to reject pietism, regardless of your eschatology. If you honestly believe that your entire calling on earth is to have the greatest Bible study in the world, and have the greatest spiritual life, and to pray 3 hours a day, and to have offended no man ever, you need to reread the Bible and pick up what you've missed. And if you're not going to reread the Bible, then you need to justify how you stand in contradiction by your actions to all the heroes of the faith before you. If you are right and pietism is acceptable, then please explain how all these other men of the past are wrong. And none of them can do that. They have to. I know it's largely cowardice. It's largely, you know, financial ease. It's largely being accepted by their culture, their homeschool group. We have to get over those things. You're going to wake up, or your children are going to wake up, in a culture that looks nothing like, you know, the remnants of the West that we're still looking at today. If they don't reject it now and train their kids now, they're going to have nothing to look back and nothing to pass on to their grandchildren at all. They're going to have lost everything they thought they were standing for, just by standing here and watching it all walk away. And that ties into probably my last point on what we need to do to redirect the movement of homeschooling from a leadership standpoint. You just have to train homeschoolers in tactics. They don't have tactics. They don't understand what they are. This is tied up in their pietism. They don't understand what a proactive approach to changing culture looks like. Again, it's not a fake sword. It's not, you know, girls dressed up like Hiawatha. This is not coonskin caps and charades. This is real life. These are real enemies. These are people that hate Christ. They hate his people. They hate his church. They hate the West. They hate Christian civilization. They're trying their best to destroy it. When you walk around in society these days, you see, you know, the empty remains of a people that have been decimated by this government education system. They are, you know, for all intents and purposes, perfect successes of what the government school is trying to do. People say to me all the time, oh, my school is failing. Oh, my school is not doing well. Your school, look around your society, look around Walmart, look around your dollar store, wherever you know, people congregate in your community. Those are the perfect success stories of government education. They've decimated our people. They have degraded our people. They've destroyed any heritage we thought we had. They've destroyed any connection we thought we had. And then you have homeschoolers, you know, that aren't even countering that. They're not pointing out the history that we inherited. They're not pointing out the heritage we have to be proud of. The homeschoolers are buying this same, you know, quasi-feminist, jingoistic, evangelical Christianity. They're not turning out kids that know how to go after a government school, that know how to go after an ideology, that know how to shut down a government school, or how to engage or interact with their culture. That has to happen, or there's no point. We'll have nothing to pass on. There'll be nobody to homeschool.
Right.
There'll be no, you know, where there is no vision, the people perish, and they haven't given them the tools to live out their vision, and so the vision is disappearing from even the homeschoolers. They're going, why are we doing this? Why bother? And if you don't teach them how to do it, there's no point.
So good. I love the reference to the word jingoism, by the way. It's a great word.
Thank you.
And we are at an hour and 26 minutes. You have been our longest guest thus far. Thank you so much for joining us, Bobby Lee Swagger. Any recommended resources for our listeners and readers pertaining to issues of government schools or homeschool criticisms? You've got the floor for a couple minutes.
Sure. Really quickly, I'll list a couple of titles that are books. Most of these are, you know, under $20. Many homeschool families could afford these. Many of these could be passed around to your friends still in government education. One of them is by a man named Bruce Short. He's a personal friend of mine. His book is called The Harsh Truth About Government Education. It's about 350 pages. That is something you could give to a government educator and say, can you explain away all of this? Another one is called Let My Children Go. That's by E. Ray Moore of Exodus Mandate Ministries out of South Carolina. Again, a close personal friend of mine. That's also a little more current than The Harsh Truth book by Short is. There's another, a much shorter book, much easier to read for a parent. If you're trying to get a parent to see this point of view, there's a book called Millstones and Stumbling Blocks. Much shorter. I mean, very affordable. That's a classic handout. I think the classic work on this is John Taylor Gatto's book, The Underground History of American Education. Really, I mean, if you want to know everything from the Prussian founding to the Unitarian, you know, elite that orchestrated it to Horace Mann, if you want the whole history, that's your go-to book. Another resource that should be mentioned is Colin Gunn's movie and now book. And I think it's available on Kindle for around $5 now, Indoctrination. That's been extremely popular. It's been shown at hundreds of homeschool conventions across the country. Again, he's a friend of mine. I recommend the movie pretty strongly to parents that are kind of on that edge, of needing to know, is this something we should try, or what's wrong with my school? As far as a better approach to homeschooling, now, unfortunately, there isn't much from my, from the perspective I've laid out. And that's, I think that's one of the strongest arguments for my position, is there's not a man to do this. I mean, you're interviewing a woman for the first time because there's not a man to say this. And that saddens me, obviously.
Very interesting.
I shouldn't have to be here, honestly. I should be back in my kitchen. But I don't mind, obviously, but there aren't many resources to point to that really espouse the worldview we're after. At least nothing new and shiny and glitzy like indoctrination will be. I know Andrea Schwartz of Calcedon has written several different books on homeschooling. The Homeschool Life is one of them. Lessons Learned is another. Those are good. Rush Jimmy's book about the Christian curriculum obviously will help give you a better focus. It comes down, though, honestly, to the discussion of, orthodoxy and orthopraxy. If parents understand what they're trying to do, how to do it becomes a little clearer. But unfortunately, I don't have great resources to point you to in the tactical department. I mean, there's been a dearth of that for 30 years now, and it's more of a, as long as you avoid or repudiate the things that I've mentioned, you'll end up in new territory by most people's standards, and hopefully you can muddle out a better result. But I can guarantee you, following the traditional homeschool recipe will not lead you to a different result. So,
wow, such a great interview! I've had such good responses from people in the chat room, and I know that this is the message we all need to hear. Men need to step up. I want to thank my guest, Bobby Lee Swagger, so much for coming on and doing this well-needed interview. Tune in on December 1st for Scott Terry, my friend, who will be discussing Christian presuppositional apologetics. And then December 15th, a very fascinating show in my view, John McGregor comes on to discuss the topic of conspiracies. Tune in then, and I want to thank everybody for listening. Till then, God bless, and we'll see you on our next show. Thank you.